All right, you're welcome back to the 9 till noon show. The DL Debates broadcast this evening after the 7 o'clock news, and it's going to be another business one, another busy one, as you can imagine. Its presenter is Brendan Devenny, and he joins us. Hello, Brendan. You got a Gerry Adams look going on.
Did you think? I'll start denying everything you ask me. Greg, I'm finally, I've just given up on the stubbornness of not needing some specs.
That's so, the commentary for you, isn't it?
That's it. Like, sometimes the subs can be printed in very fine print, and I'm struggling then. And there's nothing worse when you're doing a bit of commentary. If you can't see a name or two, Greg, the pressure's come on. Like, Saturday evening over in Convoy, and I appealed to the Aroo people, please get yourselves new jerseys. Hey, you couldn't see the numbers on their jerseys, which was a... made it a bit of a difficult proposition, but listen.
Let's start with that game. Aroa, St Union's coming through in the end to beat Aroa in a tight game. Will be hard to make up one player from the next.
Yeah, listen, Greg, it was a phenomenal weekend of sport in Donegal and GAA. So much to wrap up. I mean, it was brilliant. What an end of the season we're having right across all our championships. Junior, intermediate, the ladies' final yesterday, and then, as you say, the seniors. It was very wet over in Convoy. The pitch was immaculate, Greg, after all the rain that fell. It just was a very wet night. And I have to say, John McNulty had a real very well set up. You know, Unions were very lackluster in the first half, and indeed, Aroo could have went in much further ahead than he did at half time. And second half, the introduction of Niall O'Donnell was pivotal. You know, unbelievable impact he had. He was absolutely stand clear. And between him and his brother Shane in particular, they kind of lifted the whole Unions team. It was a very strange performance in the first half, and I'd have to say that a lot of that came down to Aroo as well and how they played. They'll be disappointed. They had five wides and a couple short as well. They could have been further ahead, but as I say, Niall coming on in the second half put a bit of championship bite back in them. And as I say, between him and his brother, they really took the game to Aroo and ran out fairly comfortable winners. And Greg, the great thing about sport, you know, Unions were cruising to a victory. They were 6 points up, and it was more or less just time running out. Aroo scored a goal on the point inside a minute. They bring it back to two. And you're thinking then at that point, you know, let's say they smashed another goal, they could have robbed Unions and left. So it's funny, no matter what we see in sport, and particularly I think in GAA, a game can flip so quickly as it was. Unions stabilised and are through to the last four.
Yeah, you're also at Gwydor Ardra. How did that experiment of not having goalkeepers go?
Yes. I mean,
by the way, that wasn't a dig at the quality of goalkeepers, by the way. But yeah. I mean, you know, 8 goals, it's you don't see it too often.
Right, that's it. We had 5 scores at half time at that game on Saturday night, the Unions Aroo game. We had 22 scores in Fulcara yesterday. Beautiful day too, down in Park de Finan. And I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Like, it was just raining goals. I mean, 5-14 to 3-11, a scoreline you don't see too often in Donegal club football. And I was talking to the boys, you know, Gidor actually had a couple of very low scoring games against Dunlow. No goals in a couple of games, and then an absolute flood of games. And you know, I talked to John Ross Molloy after the match, just about half-time, about Gidor did seem to get a bit of defensive shape in the second half, and Ardra just stuck to their guns and went for it. They were applauded off the pitch by their supporters, Greg. A lot of people didn't think Ardra would make it this far. So I think there's a thought in Ardra fans that they're putting their best in this. They're trying to play football the right way. They stuck to their guns. Mm. And they still had 3-11, which was admirable on the day. But Gidor, the firepower was too strong in the end, and they're through the semis.
Yeah, Niamh Connell, would it be fair to say, breeze past Kilcar, 4-7 to 9 points. They set a mouthwaterer against your team.
Yeah, it's a massive one, Greg. Yeah,
listen, go on, have a drink of your coffee there. It's nothing worse than it's halfway up to your mouth and you have to stop.
I know. Listen, it's Monday mornings, Greg. I'm a bit of a slow starter end of the week. It's usually a Wednesday before I'm in form, so I have to pep up for you. But listen, do you know what? We were wondering when this match was going to come, Greg. It was inevitable. Was it going to be a final? I mean, the last two finals they played, it's won each in recent terms, and up until that stage, there was kind of four teams in Donegal everybody talked about, but certainly the Carlin Unions did look a step ahead of the rest. So it was a matter of when they would meet. Would it be a quarter, a semi, or a final? And as it turns out, it is the semi-final. They were playing against the Stiff Breeze yesterday, went down 3 points down. So there was question marks there about could Kilcare pull off. You can't say it was a shock, right, but certainly Neve Conlon were favourites going into it, but they showed their championship pedigree. They are the current Dr. Maguire holders and goals. Greg, as we're seeing all over, I mean, four goals to no goals for Kilcare, that's the difference. So you hit the back of the net. You know, if you out-goal that position, you're more likely going to win the match, and that's what Neve Conlon did.
McCools versus Glenn Swilly. Great result for McCools, obviously.
Yeah, again, we talk continually about sides that are going to step up and you know, progress and be competitive. And you have to say Sean McCools are doing that. A lot of people, that was a very difficult game to call, Greg, you know, and it was settled by the brilliance of Oisin Gallen. I mean, every game now that's played with McCools, and I'm not taking anything away from the rest of the team, and I'm sure he wouldn't as well, but you look across the wee box in the Donegal News on Monday for Man of the Match, and it tends to be Oisin that's in there. And I think what a lot of people's excited about, Greg, is like from a Donegal perspective as well, you look at that and you think Gallen is just playing, you know, the type of football that you'd say has him on the top bracket of forwards in the country, because he can't continue going, and Greg, he's hitting scores from all over the place. He is such a danger, and he's going to be a massive card. But for now, it's McCools that he's the star man, and Glenn Swilly, I suppose, again, another club that's coming through a bit of a change. They have a new wave of young players to join, some of their seasoned top boys, ex-county boys, and of course led by Michael. But it was Oisin's day, and now the way the draw is, Greg, that the fact that you're going to have Guidoor or McCools in, it's been a long time since either of them have been in a county final, and that type of thing's good, I think, Greg, in terms of it progresses teams. You know, if you take a team all the way to a county final, no matter what happens in that final then, it's a massive step for you to...
And it comes down to one game, and you just never know. I mean, the gaps aren't perhaps as wide as they once were. I was in McCool Park, believe it or not, at the weekend. Dunloe versus Downings. Dunloe are a tight outfit. Spirited performance from Downings, but Dunloe were excellent. And Termon, I mean, they're top class as well, aren't they? So that kind of tidied up those two divisions for the women.
Big ding-dong, yeah. Listen, the two titans, Glenfinnan and Termon, as you say, that's four in a row there. They're battling out. And I was looking back, it's probably 10 years plus since either of them was... One of them has been in the final, and lately it's been the two of them every year. The way the draw is set up, they're going to meet in the final. It doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon. And that time, you say, goals again, as we said, Greg, is the difference. Termon got the two goals. You know, Glenfinnan weren't able to register enough when they were on top of Termon, and that was the difference. My sister Maria was over covering that game, so she's given us a few words on that this season. You say, in the Junior A, Dunloe coming out on top against Downings. They both go into Ulster now. They play the Tyrone champions.
Mm. All right, and in the intermediate, Mallon and... Downing's two good days for those teams. Right, so you have a good team as always, Brent, on the show this evening.
Yeah, yes, indeed. As I say, Maria is joining us. She was at the ladies' game yesterday, so get her updates on what happened there. And then Ryan Fair, the Donegal News, is coming on. And Gary McDade, the Pep Guardiola of the Glen, the tactical mastermind, he likes to be called. he's coming on as well to give us the lowdown and everything. So along with that, Greg, we'll do a preview as well, coming into all the championships. Of course, in the junior, Narasa will be playing Neville as well, and what is going to be a cracking match too. So just hope we see how the fixtures, they haven't come out yet. Probably something, maybe McCool Park Saturday evening game, and maybe one in O'Donnell Park on Sunday. Mm. It's probably how it's looking for the seniors. So we wait to see just if that's the course of action. But listen, should be a brilliant weekend, Greg, because the football, certainly I'm feeling it from other years, it is hotting up a bit better. There is, it's more entertaining fair that's happening, which is great to see.
Yeah, and it brings the best players through. And one thing I would suggest, if they could just loosen the purse strings slightly, is change the scoreboard at McCool Park. I mean, it's the county ground, and it's brutal.
Yes. If I had known you were there, Greg, I would have got some updates from you.
No problem. I could have done that for you. No, but I used to cover GAA games back in the day.
There you go.
Finn Harps. I did Finn Harps matches.
Maybe you could give me some advice.
No, I can't give you any advice, but let's not get carried away with ourselves, Jerry. No, I couldn't give you. But could I bluff it? Yeah. Could I give you could I give you any advice? No.
Don't be giving it away about the bluff. No, don't
be giving it away. Sure, that's all we're doing. That's all. I'd do that for 3 hours a day. Kamir, looking forward to the show tonight. People can listen to it live from 7 PM or after the 7 PM news, and also it's available then for a podcast. A cracking Maria will be covering the two ladies games in McCool Park yesterday, and then Ryan and Gary joining Brendan to look back on a great weekend of football and looking forward to a really exciting, and I think sometimes you underestimate how it gets the buzz going in the local area, be it the men's or the women's or whichever grade it is. There's so much passion out there for the game, Brendan, and it's so organic. It's a beautiful thing, even if you don't have a dog in the race to sort of sit in on. And that's why some people were disappointed that maybe the scheduling for the weekend didn't allow for people to attend different games and what have you.
Yeah, I seen a couple of people giving out just about where all the fixtures were. They were so far apart. But it's a big county, Greg, and I can understand as well wanting to take games to different places. I mean, Convoy last day, the cars were way out the road. Fokara yesterday, cars way out the road. And listen, if you're not in the GAA, understand, but you know, so many people are. And I think from Jim McGuinness coming back in from the turmoil of last year and everything that happened, there's this lift, I think, into the county that's come first from that. Now your club championship, as I say, Greg, has been much more entertaining this year and right across the board. You know, our ladies and our intermediate junior, everything. Now there's a lot of fascinating games in there, and I think there's a real energy coming back into the county and looking at around at these new players, and particularly Alexa of Galen there, of course, and some of his stuff. A lot of people's looking now at these guys and how they'll fit in the gym system as well. But yeah, there's huge interest in the club championship. And just a couple of weeks ago now, that we see who takes the titles again.
It's great to see. It's okay. DL Debate on just after 7 PM live tonight in association with Sister Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's in Letterkenny. And of course, you can then podcast it at your leisure. Thanks very much, Brendan. Have a lovely day. Take care of yourself. Brendan Devaney there. Now it's time for a Monday Focus, where we set aside a piece of time to talk about something that affects people, be it health or whatever it might be. And today we're talking about gambling and gambling supports, gambling therapy and support services. Anytime we bring up the topic of gambling on this show, people text and go, thanks very much for talking about this, because it's often very hidden, very secretive. It's affecting an awful lot of people, be the person gambling or the person around them. And I think sometimes then just simply talking about it makes those people perhaps not feel so isolated as they might. Gertrude Houghton is Gambling Support Counsellor with the Finn Valley FRC and is in studio with us. Good morning to you, Gertrude.
Good morning, Greg.
And we're also joined by Tony O'Reilly, Gambling Addiction Counsellor and co-author of Tony 10. Tony, thank you very much for joining us.
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having us on.
No, it's good to let people know, Gertrude, that there are supports there available. What kind of services do you provide?
Yeah, we're one of 22 family resource centres in Ireland who have applied to the National Forum of Family Resource Centres to run this service for families of gamblers or gamblers themselves. So we are a counselling service and a family support service for those people affected.
Yeah.
And it's in the, well, we do it in the Finn Valley Family Resource Centre in Stranorlar. I've been lucky enough to be able to do outreach in Letterkenny as well. And so
gambling addiction is a widespread problem that's not necessarily easily quantified, is it? In other words, how bad, how many, you know what I mean? How widespread in communities, you know, gambling addiction is?
Yeah.
Because we associate it with horse racing, but it could be online bingo, it could be scratch cards, or it could be, you know what
There's
I mean?
There's so many now. Like, you know, Tony will be able to tell you a wee bit more even about his journey, but, you know, like you say, the bingo, the online bingo, like people just start off maybe with a simple game on their phone, and before long, it turns into an addiction.
And we're not talking about your local community bingo here. We're on about bingo specific
online
apps where it's just 8 cents to play or something like that. There and next
they get
thing you
in.
Know,
they, and the thing about it is you get a lot of free, you know, where you can keep playing. You don't even have to get out of your bed. You know, your phone's beside you and you go on, and that leads to the bigger stuff then as well. And like that, going into bookie shops and all. I mean, people can enjoy those and do a little bit of it, the Grand National, different things, but there's some people who it's really affecting.
And also, too, as well, and I'm preempting some texts coming in here, but there are casinos as well, and I've heard stories of, I've heard stories of people on the show, the partner doesn't come back because they go straight with the wages to the arcade. And they come back and there's nothing.
That's right, Greg.
And it's Friday and there's nothing there.
And Greg, for most, like you take the bars, like a lot of people would say, well, they can go to the pub and things, but there's an opening and closing time. Mm. There's very little at the minute around closing of the arcades, you know.
And often very little light, often no clocks.
You take people going to the disco down the town, if they're thrown out of there, where do they go? They go down to the local arcade. They can get in there in the middle of the night.
Yeah, and Tony, we're going to talk about, you know, obviously the services and how people can get help, but it's what we're up against in that the way things are constructed now, gambling is just perfectly normalised. You listen to local, national, doesn't matter what it is, sport, you can't enjoy it unless you're betting on it. That could be a throw-in or it could be two flies running up the wall. Our younger people from a very early age through the likes of FIFA, or it's not called FIFA anymore, but EA, it's about you buy a pack and you open the pack and you get the release of what it is. If it's Fortnite, you're running around, you're opening chests, you don't know what's going to come out with it. It's all, be accident or design, conditioning people from a very, very young age to feel that buzz of the bet.
Definitely, yeah. There's definitely a blurred line between gambling and gaming. You mentioned FIFA with the loot box and the player packs. You know, it's the randomised outcome. So it could be that when you buy a pack for real money, so you can actually get players within the game. So it gives you the country first, then the position, and then the player. So it's like that. If you get Portugal and then forward, am I going to get Ronaldo for my team so I can enhance my game and experience? But also in Grand Theft Auto, there's actually a virtual casino within the game, where people can use real-world money to play casino-type games, very similar to what you see on online, which can normalise gambling and give a false sense that it's also easier. Mm. And then you have social media influencers who will have videos on how to win more money in the specific high roller tables within this game as well. And we're seeing a lot of, when I do a lot of the school talks, which students will talk about 8-ball pool, there's a lot of gambling elements in that. So it kind of normalised the whole behaviour.
So what I'm trying to get at, and what you're articulating far better than I could, by the time we get to the point where someone with their own card can sort of start getting caught up in gambling, there's a conditioning that's been ongoing, a normalisation of it.
Yeah, very much so. And even with the lights and the jingles, they're all conditioned to keep us playing for longer, keep us online for longer. You know, like Snapchat, I don't have myself, but my daughter has it, and she talks about being on a streak with her friend. I said, what's a streak? Well, I text her every day. It's like a streak that it shows I've been texting her each day for the last 300 days. So all these sites are designed to keep us on there for longer.
And also, if you don't mind me, on Facebook, for an example, and the same with TikTok, Facebook design, you pull down on your feed and it reloads again. Yeah. And it's the same psychology used as pulling the one-armed bandit in a casino.
Yeah.
It's this, that is the logic, because you keep pulling down and you get another surprise, It's the exact same as putting 10 senses in and pulling the arm of the one-armed bandit. So again, it's another area that casually we're being sort of conditioned.
Very much so. And conditioned is the word you use. Yeah. It's normalizing gambling in our society, but also with school kids. It's the ability to place a bet is there because of the lack of legislation regulation. Mm. I've done plenty of school talks where the students age 15 all have online accounts, and I'd ask them, how do you have that? Well, I can manipulate the data on my phone, so I can open up an online account, bet freely. Yeah, you mentioned Facebook. If you go through any of your feed and Facebook, generally if you follow sports teams, they might have enhanced odds for Liverpool Spurs the weekend, for Liverpool to win 50-1. So it's kind of dragging people in and normalising it within young people. And then even if you look at Sky Sports, it'll be like, you know, the stats that were being bombarded with, like, or what are the expected goals in the match? Like, who needs to know what the expected goals are going to be unless you're gambling on the handicap of the game?
Yeah, and even like DAZN entered the boxing market, for an example, and then they've opened up DAZN betting. And then now between rounds, they cut to someone saying the odds and this and the odds and that. So really, actually, it's unavoidable. And I have sympathy for someone who's had a gambling addiction, because it's like a drink addiction and not being able to go into a pub. Gambling addiction, could you even watch any sport without it being rammed down your throat every which way? Go ahead, Gertrude.
No, definitely. Yes, you're so right about that. And, you know, you mentioned there, Greg, about putting in a few cents into the machines. You can't even put in coins anymore. It's notes. So that's weird. And you just tell how much money you can lose in a very short period of time as well.
Yeah.
So that could be like a family's income in a couple of hours.
Tony, you're an author, obviously, and a gambling addiction counsellor, and you've talked about the talks that you give and what have you. What is your background, Tony, if you don't mind me asking?
Before I became addiction counsellor, my background would have been finance. So I was a post office manager with On Post. And when my gambling addiction got worse and worse and I got deeper and deeper into it, I done the unthinkable for me. I started stealing from my employer.
Yeah.
I was on the radio station before, after the book came out. I think I was interviewed that. Before.
Yep.
And so it spiraled very, very quickly to stealing more and
What's
more money.
What's the emotion when... What do you think? Is it chasing losses? Is that really the driver?
Chasing wins and then chasing losses.
So if you say, right, I'll borrow this money from my employer or whatever it might be, and when, is there a justification? Do you realise that you're committing a crime?
To say for fraud to happen, three elements have to be present: pressure, opportunity, and rationalisation. Mm. So the pressure I was under was absolutely huge. My loan payments were going out each week. I was just about keeping my head above water. And because I had the opportunity to get access to the safes, I started rationalising what I started doing. Because it was, I just borrowed, and you're so convinced you're going to win and pay it back. But in essence, you're stealing, you're committing a crime. But you don't see it as that. You rationalise each moment. In the same way as Gertrude was saying, that if someone's putting that last couple of hundred euro into the machines, they don't rationalise in that moment. They don't think about the consequence that we're not going to have food on the table, because you're in that, your brain has been hijacked at that stage. You've gone past that point of no return.
And the thing is, and the reason why it's such a successful addiction, so to speak, is because there's no outcome, there's no win. So say, for instance, you put 1,000 euro on a 1,000-to-1 shot. You don't close your accounts and go, well, that's that. My gambling career is over, because it's not really the accumulation of wealth that's driving the addiction, is it, Tony? I suppose it varies from person to person.
It does.
Maybe
it varies.
My example was you end up with a million, but downgrade that. I mean, that's not enough.
You'll always hear it's about being in action, like, and it's chasing wins or chasing that winning feeling. And they always say if you're using gambling to help you, whether it's financially or emotionally, you're on that slippery slope. For example, I had a student who contacted me. His dad actually contacted me last year, saying that his son had just come to him expressing suicidal ideation. He just gambled 10,000 euro of his master's fees for college. Now, this person was doing normal football bets the weekend, but then went online on casino sites, which would be seen as like the crack cocaine of gambling, is what they're being called. So he got an early big win, started chasing that win, but then subsequently lost the big win and then started chasing that loss. And within 6 weeks, like, my addiction developed over 12 years. Within 6 weeks, he had lost all that money. I was in a place where he was thinking of taking his own life because of that gambling problem.
And that's it, Gertrude. It manifests itself in different ways. Obviously, the example Tony gave there, the person just felt they had no options left. But others will start stealing and continuing it, or find different ways, or start deceiving people. And it's amazing, and we're kind of learning to some extent, it's amazing that what people, the level of deception they'll employ to feed these habits.
Yeah, it's very sad because, like, again, good human beings, but just get caught up. And as Tony says, chasing that one then and losing so much, and then it gets to a desperate stage. So they're going to do anything they can then to try to win it back. And sometimes, you know, it can be selling off items into the home, you know, precious pieces of jewellery, stealing, you know, and that. And
I'll pawn it, but I'll buy it back, or whatever it might be. Yeah,
yeah, okay. Yeah. And I mean, that this is happening everywhere. This is not just, you know, things that happens now in certain parts of Ireland or that there. It's everywhere. And we really, really have to support, you know, offer support.
Is there another cohort too, though? Because it's a little bit like, you know, for loved ones, partners, mums and dads, often it's mums and dads with gambling I've come across on this programme. But that, you obviously have those that hit the wall really quickly, like Tony was outlining, but there's others that continue to gamble and probably don't think they have a problem. You know, they'll talk about, oh, I won 300 quid, but they never tell you that I lost two and a half grand to win it. How do you get families that would come to you and say, well, how do I reach this person, or how do I get them to recognise they have a problem?
You know, at that stage, probably not as much. The ones that are coming to our service, Tony, like as you say, mums, dads, partners, or gamblers themselves, they really are now at this stage. They've lost so much. They're on their knees.
How do you intervene, though? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, can you?
Well, if they that's it, because like as Tony said, to some extent, they will have made plans maybe to take their own life.
Could anyone have stopped you in your tracks if they had spotted what was going on?
Depends on timing. Like, you're asking how to intervene. It depends on the timing. So, like, I didn't set out to become a compulsive gambler. There's a continuum. So I started off as a non-gambler, and then I worked my way right through to having a gambling disorder. So it really is about timing of when either a person realised themselves, or a family member, or even sometimes it can be a colleague or a friend. So there was a point past when I started stealing money, I wouldn't have wanted to stop, because it was always about trying to get back to zero. Even nowadays, with the lack of legislation and regulation, like the bookmakers or the online sites have a duty of care to the customer, but because of the lack of legislation, it does end up that they don't intervene in the way that they should. And there is that fine line, or that, you know, that tipping point where if the person goes beyond that, they're gone into a place where it's very hard to pull them back, and the person has to want to get the help and support. And a lot of times it can be the family members looking for advice or information, but the person themselves is still convinced they can gamble their way out of the problem. Whereas I think it's commonly accepted, I can't drink my way out of a drink problem, but the gambler's so convinced one big win, I'll fix it all. So I just have to keep on doing.
And they can genuinely believe that if they get to zero, they'll walk away.
Yeah, but even if I got to zero,
I believe it. Yeah. That's why it's sort of it's almost perfect addiction, because because it's unachievable almost. It's what about the notifications I get? Now I have a few apps on my phone. I haven't used them for yonks, but the one app that pushes me all the time is the Lotto app. It's 170 million this, 80 million that. I probably could switch notifications off, but we gamble billions on the Lotto, and it's very easy to find out how, because they publish every year how much they donate to charities, divide by 3, multiply by 10, you get how much we're gambling, right? Is that something that comes across your desk much, Gertrude, or is it mainly the other types of gambling we've talked about?
To date, with me, Greg, for the last year and a half, it's not the Lotto. Would be like some scratch cards would be big problems and things like that then, because they maybe go off one thing and they go on another.
I get you.
Yeah.
So what are the problems? What way are people mostly addicted in the last couple of years?
It would be the bookie shops.
Yeah.
It would be the arcades. And it would also be online on their phones then. And that can be around, say, the simple game starts off as bingo and that. Or it can be then where there's matches coming up and getting the results and things like that there. Males, I suppose, would be, I suppose it's more acceptable for them to be seen in the bookie shops and things like that. So women tend to maybe go to the arcades or on their phones.
Yeah, okay.
Not that males do that as
well. Right, we're going to talk more about the services, the events coming up. More maybe some advice from Tony about how, if you're listening to this and it's resonating with you and you want to make a change as to how you might. But we have to take a very quick break, and then we'll be right back with more from Gertrude and Tony. Okay, some of your comments coming in as part of this Monday Focus. Our guests, Gertrude, I beg your pardon, and Tony, are still with us. Hi, Greg. I gambled everything online. None of my family knew. I'm clean the last 2 years. Not easy, but I wish everyone hope and the power to beat this awful addiction. Well, congratulations to you, and well done on recognising the problem and being 2 years gambling free now, or clean as you describe it yourself. Plenty of people gambling on the National Lottery every day, and it gets plenty of airtime on the radio for that. Seaside town resorts have big mega gaming gambling casinos, no support networks for the people. And my son had a gambling problem, but it was all online on his phone, hence why no one knew about it until it was too late. Getting him off it all was a very difficult journey. He spent most of lunch breaks glued to his phone, but sure no one pay any attention to that these days. Yeah, this is a new problem which you have both identified and recognised. It's in your pocket. So I can take this phone out now. I never had the money. I can gamble anything that I want. There's an event taking place tomorrow night from 7 p.m. until 9 p.m. It's in Jackson's Hotel on gambling and gaming addiction. Tony, you'll be speaking at that. Yep. What is the message you want to get across to people?
So I suppose the event tomorrow night is mainly for the community. We have, and also we have an event in the FRC tonight, mainly for professionals. But tomorrow night's for parents of... some of the students who will be speaking to over the next couple of days. And it's me sharing my lived experience of gambling, showing how it started off at a £1 bet on the World Cup in 98 and how it developed into an addiction which saw me stealing £1.75 million from my employer. And it's also a little bit around gaming, so it shows the blurred line between the two. So generally with parents, they're really interested in the gaming side because, as we mentioned, there's gambling elements within games and our kids could be playing games and we don't know that there's actually gambling elements. Like my own daughter for a long time, a couple of years ago, was playing Roblox, and there's lots of spinny things in it and open up war chests and all this kind of stuff in it. And there has been examples where kids have cleared out their parents' credit cards to buy these in-game purchases. Yep. I've worked with numerous people with gaming where €5,000 was gone off one parent's credit card, another person gambled €10,000 of his own money. Or gambled, I say, but spent on player packs, which is a sense of gambling.
I mean, it is gambling. So if someone says, I've cleaned my room, can I have €12 for a player pack for EA Sports? They're gambling because it's a game of chance.
Randomised outcome,
exactly. That's exactly it.
And for some of those young people, they get their parents' card once. You know, when the temptation comes next, the parent mightn't be at home, they use the card again, then, and before, as Tony says, too late, their account's wiped out.
So I suppose the event is to really highlight gambling and gaming addiction, and especially with young people, because adolescents are now twice the prevalence of the adult population for gambling problems because of the ease of access, as you were saying, with mobile phone, but the normalisation of gambling within sport as well. So it's really to have a conversation around gaming and gambling, and mainly gambling. And a lot of times when the parents do come, to get so much from the talk so that they can have the conversations at home with their...
Does there need to be a bigger crackdown on the industry? Because you hear people who want to be forgotten by them, but they still get the emails and stuff. And I don't think, unless someone's really got that addiction, understand how that can be such a trigger.
Yeah, I think we need legislation regulation. We're working from 1931 and 1956. Gaming lottery acts. Now the regulator has been put in place, so hopefully by this time next year we'll have up to date regulation. It's a complex piece of work, but if it stops people from falling over the cliff, as I did and many others have, we need to have those things in place.
Yeah, and people, when the funds stop, some of that's, it's box ticking stuff. It's like drinkaware.ie. Really, it's not like don't drink away. You know what I mean? It's a bit of box. I mean, it's something, but it's not really effective in what we're talking about here.
Puts all the onus on the individual to stop. Yeah. Like when the fun stops, take time to think.
Just go, okay. Well,
if a person's addicted to anything, and you mentioned like being people stuck on their smartphones, we can't in that moment because the brain is hijacked. Mm. It's only when we come out of that gambling frenzy, as I call it, we get a certain amount of clarity of I need to stop this. But then gambling will create its own problems as well. Mm. So a lot of the messaging needs to stop in that sense. We need to have proper advertisement to show the other side of it.
How do you control... I mean, do you know how someone who's an alcoholic will, it's day at a time, you know what I mean? And they won't say, I'm no longer an alcoholic as such. How do you, someone who, I mean, obviously experienced some rushes, given the amounts that you were gambling and what have you. Is it a day-to-day thing with gambling, or is it something that you can sort of say, well, I don't gamble anymore and that's that and I'm cured?
It's very much so. I'm in recovery the last 12 and a half years. Yeah. I still give control of money to my partner. I have very limited access to money.
Are there triggers, Tony?
Oh, there are. There's triggers when you're watching sport, as you said, like the odds coming on, Ray Winston coming on before the game saying X player is going to be Y odds to score. Mm. But it's the internal triggers that are mine. It's... when I'm overwhelmed, when I'm, if I look back at the underlying issues for me, it's insecurities around myself and around jobs even. It's also that feeling of not being good enough or good at anything. And at times that those internal triggers are very much there. And I end up getting triggered into wanting to escape into something. Mm. And if I'm being totally honest, shopping was there before the gambling and it has slipped back in. So I have to be very mindful of that type of behaviour.
Gertrude, some general advice about your services and who can avail of them and how they should. I want you to make sure that you feel that you've got everything out that you want to before you depart.
I want to give you the contact details and that way. And I suppose just, what Tony was saying there as well, that family support is very important for people too when they're at that low ebb, and reaching out, communicating with somebody is great. And like somebody taking over the finances for them if they really are struggling with it's so important. So if people, the service is available, it's a very low cost service. People just ask for a donation and they can phone through to the Finn Valley Family Resource Centre. 07491 31245, and there's a mobile number that can be handed out as well. People can email gamblingsupport@epfss.ie, but anybody wants to come along tomorrow evening, it's open, as Tony says, to the community, parents, people themselves maybe who are gamblers. Nobody's going to know why anybody's there, so there will be leaflets there as well that people can pick up and take away and make contact themselves maybe at another time then as well.
And the cases can be really complex too, because you talk about maybe a partner, have been lucky enough to have a partner to take over the finances. You can lose everything through gambling, not just your finances, but you can burn bridges with your family. And I'm sure there's many marriages and relationships that have broken up off the back of it, and people can be in really desperate, dire straits.
And the good thing is now the younger people are coming forward for support. Mm. I was even listening there. I thought it was a very good, one of my clients would have said to me one time that the best advice he ever got was from an old man in the bookie shop who was in every day and had his few pounds just, but never went above that. But he says, son, the day that you'll won in here, he says, is the day you give it up.
Yeah, indeed.
And that was good advice.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, we have those support details, but the main encouragement is to get people to go along to, and no one knows why you're going, by the way. It's an event tomorrow evening from 7 to 9 p.m. in beautiful Jackson's Hotel. It's on gambling and gaming addiction, and maybe there's someone in your life you can bring with them and it will resonate with them. And the hope is, Tony, that people's lives are turned around. There is support, there's helps there, that it's not a hopeless situation. I mean, you've come back from as bad as probably it can get in terms of, fraud and theft and million, you know what I mean? So if you can sit here now and be an addiction counsellor and an author, that pretty much means most people hopefully should be able to turn their lives around.
Yeah, the story is a story of hope, of how to come through. It doesn't necessarily have to become an addiction counsellor. It's that hope that that's why I told the story, probably try and instill that hope that no matter how bad the person or the family members think the situation is, and it's very important to say it doesn't necessarily have to be the millions or have to be how it impacts your mental health and your, that could be someone gambling 100 euro a week or 10 euro a week. And even for tomorrow night, for people to come just to hear the story, but to also get an insight into gambling. It doesn't have to be that they've been impacted by it, but just generally to get a sense of it, because it is something, it's the fastest growing addiction of the 21st century and something that you may be impacted down the line. And I think that's so, so important.
Yeah, and I think because it's something isn't consumed or something, it kind of doesn't get the sometimes we do here, but sometimes it doesn't get necessarily the focus it might. That was Monday Focus. Gertrude Hooton, Gambling Support Counsellor at Finn Valley FRC. We have the details if you want to contact us and we can pass them on to you. And also Tony O'Reilly, Gambling Addiction Counsellor, co-author of Tony 10. And you can hear Tony and Gertrude will be there tomorrow night between 7 p.m. and 9 p.m. In Jackson's Hotel. It's on gambling and gaming addiction. And just to remind you, the Gambling Therapy and Support Service is there. It's a low-cost, confidential service available to those with a gambling problem or their loved ones. And it's based at the Finn Valley Family Resource Centre in Stranola. And you're going out to schools as well as that began. Yeah. I know you do that, Tony.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing as part of this project with the FRCs, is going around speaking to schools.
Yeah. Yes, really important.
So there's three schools in the locality are getting a free 2-hour workshop with Tony.
Yeah. Tony, thanks very much. Great to have you back on the show. Gertrude, lovely to see you
Thank
as well.
Thank you, Greg.
What is in the Mulcahy report? You might know that it is a report into alleged planning corruption in Donegal. The senior counsel, Rory Mulcahy, who gave his name to the report, was appointed in 2015 to review allegations by a whistleblower that there were severe irregularities in Donegal County Council's planning department in the early noughties. It was completed in 2017, and we've had an opportunity to ask a number of housing ministers through the newsroom or this programme, when's it going to be published. We're always told soon, soon, soon. We were told that again in August of this year, that it remains under consideration. It'll be brought to government, but still, we don't know what's in the report. Deputy Patrick Costello of the Green Party has raised this issue with the Housing Minister, Dara O'Brien. He joins us now. Good morning, Patrick. Thanks very much for your time.
No worries. My pleasure.
So why did you raise this issue this time with the Minister?
Well, I've been raising this issue consistently for quite some time, since the report really landed on the minister's desk. The fact is that there has been an investigation that has identified serious irregularities, and we need to see that report. We need to see the report for transparency. We need to see the report for confidence in the planning system. And we also need to see the report for the fact that if there has been any wrongdoing, there should be consequences. Mm.
What worries me is when a housing minister is appointed, you ask them about this and they go, yes, I'm aware of it, we're going to get on that straight away, and then the same story comes out again. Oh, it's under consideration, it's complicated. What is in this report then that is so difficult for it to be published? Is it the fact that maybe there are people named within the report that are still active, or maybe even active at higher levels, or I don't know what's going on.
Like it's very frustrating because I can't actually answer that question exactly, because I don't know, because they've been so secretive around the report. One would assume that there is named allegations in there. Indeed, I tried to get the report released under an Our House request. So this is access to information on the environment, and this I appealed all the way up to the Office of Commissioner for Environmental Information. And one of the things the department said at that point was that there were issues in terms of privacy and named individuals. So that's clearly the case here. But it has been 7 years that this has been in with the Attorney General, and there has been legal advice. And that took several years to come back, which is too long. But now it is back within the department. So the department, in my most recent parliamentary question, offered a ray of hope, because they've said that they are formulating a plan that they will bring to cabinet before the end of the year. Mm-hmm. Now, this plan may not include release of the report, but certainly this is a new part of the answer, and it seems to be a new development. So things are still moving slowly, but I get the sense that things are starting to move a little more.
Is the problem here that this is a scoping exercise by Mr. Mulcahy? That, in other words, there are no conclusions drawn in the report. It's an overview of allegations, and therefore that's why it can't be published, because it could be libelous or damage people's reputation or whatever it might be. If that is the case, then what's its purpose? Should we not then commission a report that actually does dig into these allegations and find if they are proven or otherwise? Because I just wonder, are we campaigning to have something released that can never be released for the reasons I've just outlined?
Well, then we're still in a position where this report has been sitting around for 7 years with no action from us. Bear in mind that the planning tribunals that we had, that lasted a very long time, were only really looking at issues of planning in and around Dublin. And there's clearly other issues that need investigation. Indeed, when John Gormley was minister, he started 6 planning investigations in 6 different counties, all of which, when Phil Hogan came in and became minister, all of which were ended. And the only reason that the Donegal issue came up and continued was because the whistleblower stepped forward. And that whistleblower has been vindicated several times in court and in rows with the Department of the Environment. So there are issues here that need to be investigated. And if this report, as you say, is merely a scoping exercise And we need to look at whether it's a commission or an investigation or an inquiry or even just an Garda inquiry. There's no reason why that hasn't happened.
It's very suspicious, isn't it? Because in a reasonable time frame.
This report has taken 7 years.
Yeah, multiple housing ministers now, or a couple of housing ministers now, have had this report on their desk, which at the very least is a scoping exercise, a scoping review. It highlights allegations from a whistleblower. Now, whether they're proven or unproven, the fact that it hasn't been progressed beyond that, it's certainly not because there's nothing to see here, or that would have been outlined and this would have been published. So there are obviously allegations worthy of an investigation by any of the bodies that you've mentioned. What is the government covering up here, or what are they trying to prevent from being investigated, are questions that people at this point could rightfully have.
Again, this is a question that I want an answer to, that I don't have an answer to because the report hasn't been published. We know from the whistleblower and what he has said around the planning irregularities and the issues there, and they're what need to be investigated because it was planning irregularities across six counties that John Gormley set out to investigate. So, you know, at the very least, we have planning irregularities. There is a fear that there are deeper issues there that need to be investigated. And I go back to my earlier point, the tribunals of inquiry into planning issues and certain planning payments really only looked at a very limited geographic swathe of the country. And there's huge amounts more that clearly need to be investigated and there are questions asked.
Right. So
at the end of the day, what we need is transparency.
Yes. And you've effectively said to the middle, you've said to the minister effectively, Pittle, get off the pot. If this can't be published, it can't be ignored, then pass it on, refer it to the Gardaí, I think you mentioned, let them have a look through it and see if there's any criminal responsibility or anything that needs, but don't sit on it because that is interfering in potentially due process.
And certainly referring the report to the advice of the Attorney General when the report first landed, wasn't an unreasonable thing to do. I think that was a reasonable thing to do. But you're looking at, again, it took 5 or 6 years to come back from the Office of the Attorney General based on some of the PQs I've been asking. And it is back from the Office of the Attorney General. And we need to know when we're going to see some action on this. So again, the most recent answer I got says that a plan will go to Cabinet before the end of the year. There's no details in the answer as to what that plan is, as that plan will give us the necessary transparency and the necessary investigation. So we seem to be a half step forward. And this is something that I think we'll all have to keep raising our voices on to ensure there is transparency here.
Okay, lovely stuff. Deputy Patrick Costello of the Green Party, thanks for your time today. I do appreciate it greatly.
No worries. Thanks very much.
Take care. Goodbye. Okay. We'll keep on that. Obviously, I think something has to be done, whether it's published or referred, whatever it might be. A lot of reaction to our last item. Bingo also has a mega hold on people, says a listener. I live near a casino and I've noticed an increase in older women entering gambling premises. I just think it's all very sad. They are from first thing in the morning till last thing at night. I've seen an ad for gambling where sports stars are saying gamble responsibly. They have their big logo displayed on the screen of that ad. To me, that doesn't make sense. Again, it's a bit of box ticking. And on it goes. Thanks for all the texts coming in. Those that I didn't get to today, I'll carry on till tomorrow. But that's where we have to leave it for now. Thanks to Caroline Orr, who researched and produced the show. Niamh Shields working on the programme as well. Very hard, of course. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9:00.